Welcome. In this Denko A session, studying the transmission of light, yesterday we heard the first story in this record of light transmission about Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha's awakening. Shakyamuni Buddha saw the morning star and was awakened to the way and said, I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously achieve the way. The Buddha met the morning star, and the morning star transmitted the light to the Buddha. And Keizan Zenji's commentary continues like this. If this is the way it is, this is in Japanese, imo, which is like such. If it is such, if it is thus, what do you call this principle of attaining the way of awakening, of enlightenment? Let me ask you, monks, does Gotama, the Buddha, become enlightened with you, or do you become enlightened with Gotama? If you say that you become enlightened with Gotama, or that Gotama becomes enlightened with you, this is not Gotama's enlightenment. Therefore, this is not the principle of enlightenment. That you awaken to the way with Siddhartha Gautama, or that he awakens to the way with you. This is not the Buddha's awakening, Keizan says. Even though, doesn't it sound similar to the story that the Buddha said, I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously realize the way. Is it you and me with Gotama? Or Gotama with you and me realizing the way? Keizan says no. He says, if you want an intimate understanding of awakening, you should get rid of, let go of, you and Gotama at once, and quickly understand this matter of I. So, in the yesterday's commentary, when the Buddha says, I, capital I, the great earth and all beings, simultaneously realize the way. Keizan, in yesterday's commentary, said, this so-called I is not Shakyamuni Buddha, but Shakyamuni Buddha comes from this I. So, this is the big, big, big I from which everything comes. The true self, the boundless awareness we call I, the I that when we look back and ask, who is this listening to these words right now? Or during Zazen, we might, if we're mindful of breathing, breathing in, breathing out each breath. A question might arise during such zazen. Who is mindful of the breath at this time? And we can't find some limited, graspable someone who follows the breath. All we find is open space with no edges or boundaries, vast awareness, nothing graspable and yet clear and aware. And that I is not Shakyamuni Buddha, and it's not me and you, but Shakyamuni Buddha and me and you come from this I. So now Keizan saying, if you want an intimate understanding of enlightenment or awakening, put aside you, me, and Gotama, and at once quickly understand this matter of I. I is the great earth and beings as and. This is kind of tough here. So I, in quotes, is the great earth and beings as, quote, and, unquote. And this is referring to the original story. Remember, the Buddha says, I and the great earth of beings simultaneously achieve the way. So, I, not like me, Kokyo, but now we're talking about this big I, right, that boundless awareness that already is the way and is awakened to the way, but that's the one that realizes the way. But that big, boundless awareness, space, aware space that realizes the way, realizes it along with the great earth and beings. I, big space, and the great earth and all living beings, and the grasses and flowers and mountains and rivers and trees, simultaneously realize the way. In this world of I, there actually are no things, right? It's just open space, open aware space. It's the infinite mirror upon which are reflected 10,000 things, like the great earth and beings. But it's just one mirror, right? So I, the mirror, and all the images on the mirror simultaneously realize the way. I that includes everything and doesn't differentiate between anything, and all these differentiated reflections and images on the mirror together realize the way. You get a little sense of this? Like, big space realizes the way, and all the little creatures crawling around in the space also realize the way. The boundless net stretching to the horizon in every direction is lifted up and realizes the way, and every little hole in the net simultaneously is lifted up and realizes the way. So Yeah, well, the actual language here is like attain the way, jodo, become the way, are the way, touch the way. We could say there's a practice of being and becoming, and in a way it's the practice of just being the way from beginningless time. But why is it spoken of as becoming, even if we already are being? Jodo, becoming the way, is the name for the Rohatsu ceremony on December 8th. It's called, in Japanese, Jodo-e. Becoming the way ceremony. Become or attain or touch are three translations of jo. But as you say, it's beginningless. There's nothing outside the way. And this is our ongoing question. Did something happen on December 8th? 2,500 years ago, under the Bodhi tree, or not? This is part of the question. Yes.
Well, it sounds like it goes back to that question of did I and Gautama become the way? It's like a not one, not two
yes.
situation.
It's a not one, not two.
The answer to the question, you know, who is sitting, might be, just the light. It's what we play with all the time. We have the appearance of everything, but could it be just the light?
And yeah.
So clarifying the I and the and is not landing on either one of them.
Exactly, it's the middle way. So this part of the commentary is really like a perfect middle way paragraph coming up here. Just pretty much what you're saying. Yeah, and I think that's true. When we ask in Zazen, who is following the breath, we find just space, aware space, or aware light. And we find a painful body on a cushion with an itchy ear or something like that. Simultaneously. Yeah. This is the two truths.
We say something, I'm just thinking of this now and I'll stop, but if we say that it was, you know, our Buddha nature that got this, you know, conventional body to curl up in this position and follow our breath, what's the Buddha nature? Is that a conventional quality or
no? that's like the light, right? So somehow the light, we could say it's a combination of the light and our own human karmic intentions that got us to curl up into the Zazen posture and come to Sesshin. And for example, you could say, it seems like I decided to do it and I came here doing it. And that's part of the story, and also Buddha nature, which is like our own awakened space-like mind, is saying, I am who you really are, and you, little Kokyo, and little Patrick, need to... Would love to realize this. Would love to open to this more and more deeply. So, like, why don't you go to the Sesshin, Kokyo? Like, and then I'd say, who said that? Yeah. I think it is a combination of inconceivable Buddha nature. We don't even know that it's compelling us, and our own conventional version of, well, I think there's something about Sashin. It's kind of painful and boring. I can't really remember why I would go, but I'm going to go. Yes.
I just wanted to hear that last sentence with the and.
Yeah. So now we know what it's referring to now, right? I and all beings on the earth, 10,000 things, together realize the way. And the sentence is, I is the great earth and beings as and. So I, which is like the ultimate truth of boundless space. What is this I? It is the great earth and beings as and. It's a little bit tough to try to translate this. That was his attempt. Another way we could do it that I think maybe is a little bit easier, instead of saying and, this character does actually mean like, I think we could say together with or along with. In other words, I together with the great earth and all beings become the way. I along with is maybe actually even better than together with. I along with all the 10,000 things. And then we could translate Kazan as saying, I is the great earth and beings as along with, or together with, instead of and. And then he goes on to say, and, in quotes, is not I as the old fellow Gotama. Or we could say, together with is not I as the old fellow Gotama. And the old fellow is weird, is one of Kazan's epithets for Buddha nature. Playful way of talking about this, the inconceivable I is also called that old fellow. So he's saying, first sentence is, I is the great earth and beings as and then he says, and is not the I as the old fellow Gotama. So the two contradictory sentences. I is this together with all beings, and then these all beings, this together with is not the I. That's how I hear it. It's two opposite sentences. And because, just like Patrick said, not one, not two. That's how I hear these two sentences. I is the great earth and beings together with, or together with, is not I, the old fellow Gotama. So it's not the same and not different. Or, in this order, not different, not the same. This is the two truths, the relationship of the two truths. The 10,000 conventional appearances and the ultimate truth of vast space. Even if you clarify the meaning of I, but you fail to clarify and, you lose a discerning eyeball. So, maybe this makes a little sense now. Even if you clarify the meaning of I, the ultimate truth, but you fail to clarify and, or together with, the conventional truth, you lose a discerning eyeball. Discerning wisdom eye. Right? If you just say, it's all one, that's it, period. But you fail to clarify the dependently arisen appearances and the workings of cause and effect, you lose a discerning wisdom eye. Keizan says, this being so, I and are together with, are neither identical nor different. This is this beautiful middle way paragraph, which is saying these two truths called, in Zen language, the two truths are called I and. They've never been called that before, Keizan. The ultimate truth of I and. These two, I and, are neither identical nor different. If we say that they're exactly identical, it doesn't really make sense, because the mirror is just one luminous, reflective, receptive surface with no differentiation, and the 10,000 images that appear on the mirror are 10,000 different images of red, white, blue, green, yellow. So we can't really say that they're identical, the images in the mirror, and we can't say that they're separate, because they can't be separated, actually. I and can't be separated, but to say that they're exactly the same is not it either. Not one, not two. Truthfully, your skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are totally and. Your skin, flesh, bones, marrow. This person, all the way to the core, from the surface, we might, in Zen they talk about skin, flesh, bones, and marrow as like, kind of like levels of subtlety. We could say the skin is who we think we are, basically, like, oh, who are you? Somebody on the street says, oh, I'm Kokyo. It's kind of like skin. And then we say, actually, let's look deeper. Actually, it's five skandhas, or four great elements, or something like that. That's maybe flesh, but still, or bones and marrow. These different ideas about ourselves, but even to say five skandhas is still and, because it's five skandhas. It's not I. This I is not the five skandhas. So truthfully, your skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are totally and. In other words, the conventional truth. The lord of the house is I. This is another one of Keizan's epithets for his Buddha nature. The lord of the house. You might not have thought that Zen people talk that way. But it's just a wonderful phrase. And Lord is maybe a little Christian sounding. So also this character can also be translated as master, owner, employer, and host. Host. In the Jivamira Samadhi, when the final line is, if you can achieve continuity, or if you just to continue in this way, is called the host within the host. That's this character, actually. It's nice that we don't translate it as, this is called the Lord within the Lord.
Or the master.
The master within the master. I think host is a great word, because it's kind of like, host and guest is often used in Dongshan's tradition to talk about these two truths. The host is like I, the vast field of awareness that hosts the 10,000 things, right? everything appears to this host, and all the 10,000 things are the guests. This is like in the five ranks when they talk about host and guest. This is my understanding of the meaning. Host, the mirror is the host, and all the reflections on the mirror are the guests. So, but owner also is kind of interesting. The owner of the house, the true owner, is this boundless awareness. The employer is another translation of this character. You could say, who's employing this body and mind to like stand up and sit down? Well, this host of I, this space-like awareness, is my employer, my true employer. And actually, he pays me very good wages. I'm totally satisfied with what he offers. Although sometimes, when I'm not paying attention to him, I complain that he doesn't give me enough. Yes.
Is consciousness equivalent?
Yeah. I mean, when we get into these words, I think many people would use consciousness. I think I myself these days like to make the distinction in these English words and say awareness as just the vast, undifferentiated space, and consciousness, because consciousness is usually these days in this world the translation of vijnana in Buddhism. As a Buddhist term, it's translated as one of the five skandhas, consciousness, like in the Heart Sutra. And many places we translate vijnana as consciousness. And if it's very similar, but the meaning of consciousness or vijnana is like a dualistic way of consciousness is inherently dualistic, according to Buddhist teaching. It's like our mental, and all the senses have consciousness, and our mental consciousness, all of them have an object. They all have objects. That's what dualistic means. Consciousness is aware of an object. And nicely in Sanskrit, it's this word vijnana, and vi in Sanskrit is closely related to the English word divide. Division is English and Sanskrit are closely related. So to divide or division, V section, things like this. VV section, you know, is like to cut up. And jnana means like just knowing, awareness or knowing. And is used separately as a kind of non-dual awareness. Jnana in Sanskrit is often translated as primordial awareness, as I seem to translate it as, or non-dual awareness. And then consciousness would be like dualistic awareness, divided knowing, divided awareness, vijnana. So there's jnana and vijnana. So in my mind, when I'm using awareness, I'm thinking of this objectless, space-like awareness, knowing without touching objects. And then consciousness is like divided awareness that's divided into an subject and an object. But experientially, the difference between these two is extremely subtle, it seems. And there's all kinds of great teachings about this, because we could say, well, who is this that's aware of the breath right now? In a way, we could say it's consciousness. because that's a kind of divided knowing. It seems like the consciousness is aware of the object called the breath. So it is kind of, I think of it, my understanding of mindfulness is actually like a dualistic consciousness, aware of something. But right there, in that, the nature of this dualistic consciousness is a non-dual awareness. And there's great teachings about how, upon realizing, awakening, all the Buddha's dualistic consciousnesses are revealed to be in their true nature, just like non-dual awareness. So we might say, well, that sounds kind of fancy, or I can't imagine what that is, but maybe in a simple way, we could say it's like, it could be as simple as the consciousness that's aware of, like, the breath or the book, say, like, oh yeah, this is a book, and consciousness recognizes this as the object of a book. It's, as soon as it's seen that the book is now a reflection on the mirror, it's just a mere reflection on the mirror, even though it still appears here, we could be, like, right on the edge there of this jnana, this primordial awareness that still sees the appearance of a book. But now that book is not necessarily an external object. It's like a reflection in awareness. Does that make sense? So I think consciousness and awareness, although they sound like, sometimes to me, they sound like a million miles apart, it's like right there in the dualistic consciousness, the aware part of consciousness. I've heard this teaching, that the clarity or awareness aspect of dualistic consciousness is exactly the same one of the Buddha's non-dual awareness. We don't have to spiff up our, like, clear awareness at all. The only difference is that the awareness has no object, and the consciousness does. So that we're just playing with the shift about the object. Yes.
So it seems like consciousness then is still this individual thing. It's your consciousness. Mm-hmm. And this other thing sounds almost theistic in a way.
Yeah, especially the way Kazon saying, like, Lord of the House sounds pretty theistic. But what does theistic mean? I think theistic means, like, there's something outside ourselves, maybe not in form or matter, but some thing that, in fact, we tend to at least slightly objectify, almost despite ourselves. When if I think of, I don't know, maybe we don't necessarily do this, but I think often if we say, use a word like God or something, we put it, we somehow make it into slightly, anyway, some kind of object outside ourselves. And maybe that's not true. The true religion doesn't actually need to do that. But I think it's such a human tendency. We have to relate to everything as an object separate from mind, that we do that with a theistic God. But if we say God is actually completely empty of any way to grasp it, has no essence even at all, and is completely not separate from this very mind, then that kind of theism maybe is what we're talking about, if that's a theism. I'm not sure what the definition is. But yeah, I think that all the theistic and non-theistic spiritual traditions may be trying to understand the deepest nature of reality, and in very similar ways. And then it's like how we talk about it and how we put it into words and concepts may be slightly different. And are there different at the deepest source, are there different experiences? Maybe and maybe not. I don't know.
Would you say, are they just different experiences?
Yeah, like someone who deeply realizes in the marrow of their experience, like what they might call like Christ nature or something like that. Is that the same experience as when realizing Buddha nature, but then when we start to put it into words, it starts to sound different? Or is it a different experience? I don't know.
You must have come across this question too. It's like, because you have an experience, and we, in the next sentence, say the nature of reality, that's an interesting juxtaposition.
Mm.
Why could someone assume that?
Why could someone assume that their experience is the nature of reality? Yeah, that's a great question. It's a great question. That's an important question throughout Zen,
right,
and the Buddhist tradition. How do you know if you have some amazing realization? How do you know that's it? So in this tradition, sometimes in Zen they say things like, it's like drinking water and knowing for yourself whether it's hot or cold. Like, you just really know, because almost like reality confirms it. And we might say, that sounds a little dangerous, because how do you know it's reality confirming it? And then, so we have other things in Buddha Dharma, like, is it in accord with like the definitive teachings of the tradition? So now we're kind of matching it up with words, but in a way that's what defines these different traditions and checking, and you know, and teachers, it's hard to know which teacher to trust.
It's an unanswerable question I just asked.
It's a great question.
But, I mean, it's like, it's,
how do we know?
It's sort of, we could just be exploring the realms of what's possible for a human to
experience. Well,
how can a person say that's the nature of reality? I know you can't answer it. It's a sort of a...
Here's another thing we might say, though, too, is...
What are the philosophical questions?
Well, part of it, this is also looking at the tradition. As we chanted this morning, that's one of the teachings of the tradition, the first one ever, according to some sources, the Buddha's teaching of his awakening. He said, as long as I was not fully clear in all these ways regarding these four noble truths, I did not claim to have realized perfect enlightenment, which we could say, I did not claim to have been perfectly in accord with reality. It's kind of what enlightenment means, I think, is being in accord with reality, right? And he said, in that sutra, that's how he says, when these four noble truths were fully clear, then I actually could claim that I'm in accord with reality. And so, oh, bold statement. But that's our tradition. So, without going into a whole discussion about the four noble truths, sometimes I think of it like this, like, is there, like, in this moment, in some moment that I might be questioning, is this in accord with reality? The Four Noble Truths part would be like, is there any trace of discontent whatsoever? Which another way to talk about suffering or discontent is like the slightest grasping of anything, which is like even the idea that like I'm a person sitting in the Zendo, you know, even if we're like, yeah, at least I got that much, then we're still, I'd say this, that in the Buddhist tradition we'd say that's suffering, very low level suffering. It's holding on to something. But if we can examine in a given moment, like, is there any grasping here to anything whatsoever? And we find no, there's not. And it's like we can know that. Then it seems pretty close. And then we might say, but actually I'm just sitting here peacefully. What if I might need to be tested to see if I'm grasping, right? Or see if there is any suffering or grasping possible here. So that's the nice thing about living in this world. That we like get up from the cushion and
Does Buddha say that people, intention beings, are as important as Buddhas because they're the ones that totally test you on any little bit of
it? Yeah, yeah. So we might even have a moment of total non-grasping in Zazen or something. And then later something pushes our button. I don't like it this way. And now we know. Now we're probably not in accord with reality anymore. So it's a moment-to-moment thing. So I think grasping, you know, to kind of question ourselves before other people start to test us. We could say, is there grasping? Is there any discontent? Am I totally at ease with like this scorching pain in my butt or whatever? Like no problem whatsoever, you know? Well, then maybe. And also this duality aspect. I mean, we look at grasping, suffering, and duality. All closely related. And duality would be like, do I believe that there's a world outside of this mirror-like awareness? Or am I really open to the possibility that actually it's all just mere appearance, dreamlike appearance in this given moment? Again, if somebody comes to test us, we fall right back into like it's solid and fixed. So I think these are some of the criterion from our tradition.
But listening to you talk, though, it's tests of, like, for instance, a lack of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
If someone that doesn't experience suffering, let's say that's mm-hmm. true.
Yeah.
Why by definition are they experiencing the reality of the universe? Maybe it's just like a really cool human experience.
Well, what do we mean by reality of the universe? If we equate that with enlightenment, which we may or may not do, but if we did, if we say that's what we mean by enlightenment is accord with reality, or this word enlightenment according to the Buddha means the cessation of suffering, that's how he defined, or nirvana. And they are equated in our tradition, I think, is they say, when one is in accord with reality, meaning like the ultimate truth of I, that's what we call I reality in this language, then that is the cessation of suffering. And that's the practical reason why we practice. I think most of us is like, we want to find like happiness, ease, and joy, right? We want peace and relief, freedom from suffering. I think that's the Buddha's great gift, is like, this is possible. And in Buddhist tradition, some other traditions might be into relieving suffering, but the Buddhism particularly emphasizes to fully relieve suffering, we have to be in accord with reality. We have to understand reality and be in accord. Like there's no other way. Otherwise it's just band-aids. Right? And maybe other traditions would say that too, have their own description of reality. So yeah, I think they go together. But what reality means is, also reality here would define as the ultimate truth. In Buddhist language is called paramartha satya, the ultimate truth, reality. And it's defined in many teachings, which Keizan is trying to do here, as the completely ungraspable. Which goes very nicely again with suffering, that the ultimate truth is totally ungraspable. And if suffering means grasping, then those two go very nicely together, right? In order for there to be complete non-grasping, one has to be the ultimate, be in reality. Yeah. Yeah. How do we? Yeah, confirmation is a big issue in all Buddhist tradition, and confirmation or verification, I would put in parentheses, of reality. And Dogen's famous description of practice is that shusho, funi, I think, shusho funi means practice and verification are not two, are non-dual. In other words, the only way we can confirm or verify reality is in a moment of practice. It's like we can't do some conceptual thing after the fact. It's like in the moment of letting go completely of everything, we confirm that nothing can be held onto in the first place. So, this being so, I and are neither identical nor different. Truthfully, your skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are totally and. The lord of the house is I. Or the also house can mean shop or business. You could say the owner of the shop is I. The host of the house is I, and skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are and. These are the two truths. It has nothing, so the lord of the host of the house is I. It has nothing to do with skin, flesh, bones, and marrow, nor has it anything to do with the four elements or the five aggregates. It has nothing to do with earth, wind, fire, water. It has nothing to do with form, feeling, perceptions, formations, and consciousness. So this is great, Kira. It's again about neither identical nor different. Here he's saying it has nothing to do with all, basically the entire world of phenomena is the four elements and the five skandhas. And I has nothing to do with this. And then the next sentence is, ultimately, if you wish to know the undying person in the hut, is it not separate from this skin bag here and now? This is referring to a Zen poem by Shuto. The undying person in the hut. So the poem, do you know this poem? The song of the grass roof hut. Though the hut, and it's talking about, I think, our body and mind, five aggregates is the hut. And then there's a person in the hut called I. Here's what this poem is about. I've built a hut where there's nothing of value, actually. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, when this hut was built, fresh weeds appeared. It's kind of how it is to live in a body. Now it's been lived in and covered by weeds. The person in the hut, I, this person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, I don't live. Realms worldly people love, this I, this person, doesn't love. Though the hut is small, maybe like 5'7", it includes the entire world in 10 square feet. An old fellow illumines forms and their nature. A Mahayana bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut die or not? Dying or not, the original host is present. Not dwelling south or north, east or west, firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window below the green pines, jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all, because not knowing is most intimate. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests into the hut? Turn the light around and shine it back to this mirror awareness. Then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instructions. Bind grasses together to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. This is the unity of the two truths. We might think, if you want to know the undying person in the hut, you better just like forget about this hut and this body and mind, because it's like, it's not this body and mind. But this beautiful Zazen instruction, if you want to know the undying person in the hut of this body and mind, don't separate from this body and mind, this bag of skin, here and now. Like it's not some other place. And then, so Keizan's referring to that line when he says, first, the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are, let's see, this I, right, the person in the hut, has nothing to do with skin, flesh, bones, and marrow, or this skin bag. It has nothing to do with this skin bag. And then the next sentence is, ultimately, if you wish to know the undying person in the hut, it's not separate from this present skin bag. The undying person has nothing to do with this skin bag, and this undying person is not separate from this present skin bag. That's the two sides. Thus, do not think of it as the great earth and beings as separate from you. Keizan says, although the seasons change and the mountains, rivers, and great earth are different over time, you should realize that because this is the old fellow Gotama's raising his eyebrows and blinking his eyes, all this is that single body revealed in myriad forms. It is eliminating or effacing myriad forms and not effacing or eliminating myriad forms. Zen Master Fa Yen said, you cannot say whether it eliminates or doesn't eliminate, or what effacing or not effacing can you talk about. Zen Master Ditsang said, what do you mean by myriad forms? So, do you know this word, effacing? We hardly ever use that. I had to look it up. But effacing means like to eliminate. Yeah? And it said in the dictionary, it comes from a coin. When the face on the coin gets worn down till it's flat and you can't use it anymore. It's like the face is eliminated.
So it's the wearing down part or the not using the coin?
Maybe wearing down and then you can't use it anymore either. I'm kind of playing with the idea of it. But this is translated here as effacing, but I think eliminating is a more common word. But effacing has a nice...
Erase.
Yeah, erasing. Mm-hmm. So he's referring to this story here. And it's this case 64 of the Book of Serenity, where Fayan says, he's referring to his teacher had this phrase, his teacher's Chang Ching had this phrase, in myriad forms a single body is revealed. This is, I think, another great teaching about the two truths and their subtle relationship. He had this saying, in myriad forms a single body is revealed. You might say, in the great earth and all living beings, a single form, a single body called I is revealed. You get a sense of that. We might even say, it's using the word body, so we might even say the single body is the Dharmakaya, is another name for I. In myriad forms, a single body is revealed. So Fayan says to his friend, Ji Jiao, how about in myriad forms, a single body is revealed. Is this eliminating, effacing myriad forms or not? In myriad forms, a single body is revealed. I think he's asking, when you realize the single body, like the Dharmakaya, does that eliminate the myriad forms or not? That's, I think, an interesting question. Some people might say yes, and some might say no. I think it's a kind of subtle question. When you are just the mirror, are there 10,000 images or not? Or is it just the mirror? There's no actually forms there. Or are there still actually 10,000 images? It's a great question. So how about, in my teacher's saying, in myriad forms a single body is revealed, is this eliminating the myriad forms or not? Actually, the word forms is more accurately, we could say images or appearances, is this character here. Are the appearances eliminated or not? And Ji Jiao says, not eliminated. And Fayan says, two, in this koan.
Number two.
Yeah, number two. And which I would take to mean like, that would create duality. If, in a way, either way, it could create duality, but to say like, they're not eliminated, then you have this duality between the single body and the myriad forms. If you say they're not eliminated, then you have these two aspects. So, Fayan says, two, or that would create duality. Then the students who were all around listening said, it eliminates the myriad forms. They gave the opposite answer. So Ji Jiao said, it doesn't eliminate the myriad forms, Fayan says, but that sounds like duality. And the students all around said, eliminating the myriad forms. And Fayan said, quoting the original saying, in myriad forms, a single body is revealed. And in the Book of Serenity has like six exclamation points after that. I'm like, is that a typo? Did Thomas Cleary get really excited about that? In myriad forms, a single body is revealed. And it might mean that like in the myriad forms of all these students saying this at the same time, a single body is revealed. Anyway, his friend Ji Jiao couldn't reply anything more to that, so he stayed to study with Fayan. And then in the commentary, it brings up another story. Fayan also keeps playing with this story and says, what do you call myriad forms or myriad appearances? And another friend of his, Ji Fang, said, well, the ancients didn't eliminate myriad appearances. And Fayan said, in myriad appearances, a single body is revealed. Why talk about eliminating or not? Why talk about eliminating or not? And at those words, his friend Ji Fang was greatly enlightened. I think it's like, you can't really say that in the ultimate truth, the conventional truth is eliminated or not. In one sense, yeah, there's just ungraspable space. And in another sense, the conventional truth can't be separated from the ultimate truth. So it's, why talk about eliminating it or not?
Can the heat be separated from fire?
Yeah, like that. No, but when with just fire completely, is there anything else other than fire? It might be that kind of side of everything else is eliminated. And this is where this the commentary says, saying eliminating or not eliminating are both extremely coarse-minded. And it says, the moon follows each boat on the water. This is in myriad forms, a single body is revealed. In myriad boats, a single moon follows them. The springtime follows the 100 grasses. So in each of the 100 grasses, the springtime pervades it. Zen images for this relationship of in myriad appearances, a single body is revealed. The moon follows each boat. The springtime enters the 100 grasses. So Kazan's referring to this whole thing where he says, though the seasons change and the mountains, rivers, and earth are different over time, this is old fellow Gotama's raising his eyebrows and blinking. All this is the single body revealed in myriad appearances. It eliminates the myriad appearances and does not eliminate the myriad appearances, Kazan says. Master Fayan said, you cannot say whether it eliminates or does not eliminate. Or, what eliminating or not eliminating are you talking about? And Ditsang said, what do you mean by myriad appearances? This is all kind of riffing off this Book of Serenity story. And Kazan says, therefore, practice fully and sufficiently, develop full mastery, and clarify both Gotama's enlightenment and your own as well. You should figure it out by inspecting this case in detail. Let the answer flow from your heart without borrowing the words of former Buddhas or contemporaries. On the next day, set aside for explanations, I want you to present your understanding with a decisive word. Whoa! This is nice. We get a little glimpse into Kazan's community. They must have had days set aside for, like, maybe for Dokusan, where you put the day set aside for explanations. In Dokusan, please present your understanding with a decisive word. This mountain monk would like to say a few humble words about this case. Would you like to hear them? He says. A splendid branch issues from the old plum tree. Or a splendid branch stands out on the old plum tree. At the same time, obstructing thorns flourish everywhere. Myriad branches sprout from the old plum tree, but the plum flower called Siddhartha Gautama is a splendid one. Sprouting forth from the old plum tree. But at the same time as that splendid plum flower blooms, obstructing thorns flourish everywhere. Do plum trees have thorns? the plum tree, the blackberry briars grow. Try to reach for that plum blossom. Get a handful of thorns.
What are you referring to? Kind of conventional truth as obscuration. But he, I mean, since we've just gone through this big exercise and not landing,
it doesn't.
For clarifying, you know, the subtlety of the two truths. Saying that.
Well, that's the beauty, is if we can realize obstructing thorns as dreamlike appearances, they actually don't obstruct us. But it seems like over time, after Shakyamuni Buddha, then all these Zen ancestors started sprouting all these thorny stories that poke us and are difficult. We struggle with this practice. The Buddha gave us 7 days sesshin from his 7 days under the Bodhi tree. Is it really thorny? Or is it just 7 days of plum blossom flowers? That's how I hear it. It seems like obstructing thorns come forth from the Buddhas and ancestors trying to find their way. It seems difficult like that, but if we can see that the thorns, the appearances of thorns, are not separate from the mirror that receives them, then sweet thorn pudding. May our practice and contemplation of Shakyamuni Buddha's awakening adorn his plum blossom awakening and reveal the smoothness of all thorns. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. The illusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.